Welcome back, everyone, and thank you for tuning in. This podcast promises to be a mind-expanding journey into two divergent timelines of human experience. We are It's a Sign, and welcome to our channel. Today, we're here to discuss the recent developments at Neuralink and the fascinatingly haunting path it's paving.
But we won't stop at the technological frontier alone. We'll also explore the ancient practices and wisdom that suggests we might already possess incredible powers within us.
The recent news about Neuralink's breakthrough in brain-computer interfaces has captured the world's attention. There's no doubt about that. Elon Musk's vision of telepathy through brain implants is both groundbreaking and horrifying.
And as we navigate the implications and potential dangers of such advancements, we'll draw parallels to the ancient practices and cultures like the Aboriginal Australians and their telepathic dream talk.
It's a conversation that invites us to question the boundaries of human potential and consciousness. Can we achieve incredible feats through technology? Or do ancient practices offer a path to harnessing extraordinary abilities? In a special treat, we will also touch upon the remarkable realm of plant medicine, exploring how indigenous cultures have used it to access extraordinary states of consciousness and what lessons it might hold for us today. So strap in, sit back, and
stay tuned and join us on this fascinating adventure to understand the powers of the human mind, both ancient and cutting edge.
So hey everybody, welcome back. Thank you guys for tuning in. We were kind of having a discussion last night. We had just recorded our last podcast actually, and
yeah, we was discussing at pillow talk time.
Yeah,
having some pillow talk, which often we dive into the kind of subjects that we talk about on the podcast in pillow talk, and then it turns into an episode.
Yeah. And we were discussing Neuralink, and then both of us had this kind of moment where we felt what it would be like to have that chip implanted into your head.
Yeah.
Feel that EMF radiation, that connection. And we really decided...
More like the intrusion of it. Like, yeah. Physically, it would be intruding. I've always been freaked out about any kind of, like, implants in the body because I'm such a squeamish person. So then to, like, have something drilled into your brain.
Yeah. Don't get Neuralink. That is this episode summarized in a nutshell. Don't get it. Really, really, really don't think this is going to be a good thing, but it's going to seem like the most incredible thing in the world. I know a lot of people right now are probably more in our boat, where they're like, oh, we draw the line at implants. No, I mean, most of the people I talk to, they draw the line at implants. There might be some of you listening who's like, implants, cyborg, let's do this. But most of the people I know would draw the line at that. And we might have this idea inside us, oh, we'll never get that.
It's about it becoming like accessible and affordable, because 20 years ago, not many people were getting cosmetic surgery. But now it's just like the girl who works down the corner shop might have boob implants. The taxi driver might have hair plugs. These are all implants into the body that are still, they cause massive issues most of the time with the body because the body rejects them because it's not supposed to be in there.
Yeah.
And, but it's like so popular now that, and what about all these fillers in the face and the lips?
Yeah.
Like it's freaking everywhere. It's freaky.
Yeah.
Personally, in my opinion, no offense. Like, I don't care, people can do what they want, but it makes me sad that people don't accept themselves to that level.
Yeah, well, what we're going to be seeing with Neuralink is not so much a superficial, like, I'm not so happy with my body.
I'm not so happy with my own creativity, my own mind, my own intelligence.
Yeah, but that's the thing. It might be, it'll start to be drip-fed through us to social media, and not many people are trusting of these big tech conglomerates. But the thing is, for people to buy in, they're going to have to see good examples. And it's not going to be Neuralink that sells it to you. It's going to be the people around you. When someone has it, they're going to feel immense.
It's exactly the same with, like, it's a really more intense version of any kind of cosmetic surgery. Because the surgeons aren't selling it to you. It's the supermodels or...
No, but it's not cosmetic. It's not like cosmetic surgery. You're literally going to become a god, is what it's going to be like, is how it's going to be sold. Humans, as a fundamental level, are going to become inferior. This is the shift that's happening right now. Once this technology becomes available and your brain can interface with technology on a telepathic level, there's going to be no more limits. You're going to be able to access Google. You will become Google.
You become Google. That's what freaked me out the most yesterday. It's like, other than the physical thing, because I'm so squeamish, but the thought of who are you anymore? You've just become Google.
Yeah, exactly. You're going to become this omniscient
lose your own, like, I don't know, soul or consciousness?
It'll be like you've got access to all the knowledge of humanity, the entire knowledge of the world. And it won't just be that. Like, if you're looking at the AI capabilities right now, we're kind of playing around with AI image generations. They're coming out with AI music
and stuff.
It blows
my mind. Like, it blows my mind already what you can do with AI. It's insane. Like, I went from creating images a few weeks ago that they'd have too many fingers or missing a leg, right? But now, last night we were playing around on it in your program, which maybe you pay a subscription for, so maybe it's a bit better. Nothing like that was happening. It was like creating these like unbelievably perfect images just from our description, our really bad descriptions, like really kind of vague, but was actually creating beyond what we were asking for.
Yeah, it like took the base level of our imagination. And I'll show you on the screen right now, there's Leonardo.ai has generative image AI. So you can start to draw kind of the outlines of an image you want, and you can give it a creativity level and a style, and it will start to fill those in. So you can do the light sketch of someone, and then Leonardo AI will come in and finish the rest off. Imagine that capability in your head.
Yeah.
So it's not like through a screen, you just think of what you want and then already an image is coming out. It's going to be sold as this evolution, this upgrade to human intelligence and consciousness. But at the same time, it's going to be moving us away from our own organic evolution. Let me just say one more thing. Before, when you over consume something, let's say social media, drugs, nicotine, stuff like that, one of the side effects of Xanax or something which helps to reduce anxiety is that because you're constantly feeding your brain a pill of Xanax, your mind will begin to atrophy because you no longer need to produce the hormones naturally to soothe your anxiety because it's being fed to you by a pill. So when you go off a Xanax or something like that, you will no longer have the capability or the organic capability to soothe your own anxiety. And that's exactly what's going to happen. I think it's like it takes like 21 days for unused parts of your neural pathways to start atrophying. When you have this implant in your brain and everything's being done for you through the chip, your brain's gonna slowly start to atrophy. And that's really not a good thing. It's not gonna be this like conducive interface. You're gonna start putting all that capability.
You'd still be thinking this stuff before the AI does it, right?
Or... Yeah, you might still think of a couple of things, but yeah, the AI will produce and all your...
You wouldn't be thinking of answers, though, would you? You wouldn't ever be, like, trying to figure anything out.
Yeah, if you're trying to, let's say, come up with a philosophical answer, there is a very common saying, give a man a fish and he'll eat for a day. teach a man to fish and he'll eat for the rest of his life. It's something like that, right? And it, the concept comes as well with, like, you shouldn't actually tell children the solution to a problem. You should guide them to help them think so that they can come to the answer on their own. Because that's a crucial stage of development and developing the brain.
And not just that, that it's like, if a kid's like, oh, how do I draw a fish? Then if you show them how to draw a fish, then you don't know, they could have drawn a fish in a really completely different way than anyone else normally does. Mm. And like actually create like a whole new style of art or something. And because their brain works differently, instead of drawing the outline, maybe they start with the scales. Like just something different. Yeah. It's like everyone has like a unique way of approaching things.
Right. Yeah, so once it becomes uniform, like you can tell your child, like every artist uses a reference, something like that. But it's ultimately your brain is making those leaps. It's your neural network making those jumps, creating new pathways that is healthy for the brain and keeps the brain stimulated and thriving. It's known that everyone should always be continuing to learn new things, even into your old age. There's this whole kind of mainstream thought around science that your brain is way more malleable as a child, and then once you become an adult, it's less malleable. But that has been disproven in the recent years with neuroplasticity and that concept that your brain is actually always adapting. And not just your brain, but your genetics as well. You can alter those things. And it's only because we stop learning, we kind of get into a habitual pattern, that our brains begin to atrophy and come into all sorts of diseases that we're seeing nowadays, like Alzheimer's and everything like that, dementia. And this is the brain atrophying. It's like a muscle, you need to keep training it. And once you start putting all that power into Neuralink, then what you're doing is you're growing this AI and helping the AI evolve. But as humans, we're gonna cap out at a certain biological level until eventually we'll be replacing all our parts. But I think before we kind of get into more conversation, let's just run over one of the most recent news articles about Elon Musk, because a new milestone's been hit as they've put Neuralink into the first human subject. A groundbreaking procedure has been completed where the first human subject has successfully received a brain implant designed to enable wireless communication with digital devices. The individual, whose identity has remained confidential, probably for some obvious reasons, could this go bad? Elon Musk and Neuralink probably don't want any media attention going to him directly until they know that their device has been installed correctly, there's no weird side effects, and that this person can recover. According to Elon Musk, the individual is reported to be in good health and that the initial outcomes are encouraging, particularly in detecting neuron spikes, which is a crucial aspect of brain-nervous system communication. And this development arrives after Neuralink received the green light from the Food and Drug Administration last May to begin human trials, targeting individuals over 22 years old suffering from conditions like quadriplegia and ALS, which impair physical mobility. And this was the initial aim of Neuralink. It was to give access to humans with disabilities who can't move, speak, or communicate to be able to interact with technology in order to do so. Neuralink's trial, named Prime, precise robotically implanted brain computer interface, which sounds like it's something out of a sci-fi novel, involves a robotic system for the precise insertion of implant wires into brain areas responsible for movement. So this surgery is actually done by a robot. The robot is surgically wiring this into the nervous system, which is quite advanced. And the implant aims to interpret neural signals, allowing individuals to control digital devices through thought alone, without the need for physical wires or movements. The implantation process uses ultra-fine needles, barely wider than a human red blood cell, That's crazy. Ensuring minimal cortical damage. The ultimate goal is to implant a device that remains cosmetically invisible while enabling users to interact with computers and smartphones through thought. Now, Neuralink's implant, dubbed the N1 implant, features 1,024 electrodes across 64 threads and connects wirelessly to devices via an app, powered by a wirelessly charged battery. Musk has named this groundbreaking technology telepathy.
Really annoys me that he's called it telepathy.
Yeah.
It's not telepathy. Anyway, I should hope not. Could you imagine, like, the nightmare of living in a world where we were telepathic but still fully embodied in ego?
I know.
It would be like that. You can't even imagine a worse place. It's literally hell. That would be hell.
Well, you had
to listen to everybody's egoic thoughts because we're all embodied in ego right now. Like, no one is Jesus. It's all right if you're around Jesus and listening to his thoughts, right? Because he's completely embodied in consciousness and love. But, like, my thoughts drive me crazy. Imagine having to hear everybody else's.
Well, I think,
it's not that anyway.
Well, I think what would happen is you'd have to have some sort of privacy settings. But even with privacy settings and the highest security, anything technological is open and vulnerable to hacking. But the way I had imagined it is you'd maybe have like a privacy bubble. So other Neuralinks can't interact with yours unless maybe you open it up to someone, kind of how like Bluetooth works. You can only share files with people that you approve. But
yeah, but we live in like police run countries and states. Like, how long is it before pretty much everyone's got a Neuralink and now the authorities have a right to hack into your brain?
Yeah, and scan your thoughts and memories. It's not only that, but like, how much is subliminal messaging, targeted advertisement?
Yeah, what about data? Like, data. People selling your brain data, and then, well, in your brain, like, you're not even allowed to have control over what's coming in either. So there'll be like an algorithm, just like your devices now, and the cookie settings, and everything's reading all your data. Thoughts are private. Like, the one thing we freaking have are private thoughts, like, even though, you know, most of the time you don't want them.
Yeah.
But, like,
It's not 100% true. Beings who have reached higher levels of consciousness.
No, but it's different when you're not in ego. That's the whole point, is, like, the society we live in, the level of consciousness we're at is pretty much completely run by the ego mind. So no
but
one's
how do you
at
know you would
conscious
be having those thoughts anymore once you're hooked to Neuralink? You could just be...
You could just, what, become not yourself anymore? Not, like, just become a machine?
Yeah, pretty much.
That's thinking what it tells you to think, which is to run their ads and sell your data and...
Yeah, because your thought would be... everything you're directing your thought to through the interface would also be interfacing back with your mind. It's like we're already influenced so much by those things, and we have a degree of separation. We can close our screen, we can turn off targeted ads and stuff like that. So how would that begin to
what
alter
about the
us
fact that you can't even have an iPhone without accepting the terms and conditions, which are effed up? You can't even have a TikTok without accepting the terms and conditions, which, you know, you just do, because to get by in a society, you need to have those things a lot of the time in the Western world, like, especially if you work online. And what's to say Neuralink doesn't get to that level? Like, you can't use Neuralink unless you accept the terms and conditions. And these terms and conditions, we just have to normalize, like, which are completely invading our privacy and our rights as organic beings.
Yeah. I mean, it would probably come to that point where us as organic humans, it would feel inferior. And you know how during COVID they made you take the vaccination or you would get fired? what happens when companies start requiring you need a Neuralink to be able to enter this company? Can you imagine lawyers, computer scientists, like big tech companies, and doctors, any sort of field in that regard could be enhanced, ridiculous, anything.
Anything, just like a postman.
Yeah, exactly. And any
to
any,
work for Amazon, lowest paid job, and yet still you have to have a Neuralink.
Yeah.
Because you have to have a bank account. You know, like, we still live where people exist still who never wanted to have digital money. And they lived in a time where it was all cash and they didn't even have bank accounts. Yeah. And, like, they didn't have to have a bank account. And now, I'm not saying there's anything wrong with bank accounts. I'm using it as an example of now you cannot work in society without one. So all those people were just ignored for not wanting to have to accept digital money. But they're now living in a world where you can't exist really without it. It's very difficult to live cash only.
Yeah, and right now our society is in a bit of a conundrum where technology is outpacing our ability to study it. It's growing so quickly that the studies we need to carry out are lagging behind. Like, we might be studying something still that's a decade old and only just coming to the implications of that now. One of those things is social media and social media, how it can influence mental health and everything like that. And we're seeing a huge mental health epidemic and pandemic across the globe as kind of social media begins to affect, especially children and teenagers' self-esteem and sense of self. And it's kind of creating a homogenized being, like you were saying before in the beginning with all the implants, starting kind of with the Kardashians.
But then everyone looks the freaking same.
Yeah.
But not just that. So many, it's hardly spoken about, but so many people are getting sick. Like, we even know someone who's getting sick from implants. You know, it's a really common thing. So what about the Neuralink? This is not tested. If this goes widespread,
well, it has been tested on a lot of animals, which is also controversial.
But it's not been in trials long enough, in my opinion, for it to. What it's probably going to do is get released to the public and become very widespread very quick. And plastic surgery is making people sick. How's that not going to be making people sick? It's messing with their brains.
And I know, like, the amount of studies with your phone and, like, it's like how it's not good to be in your pocket because it's causing, like, ovarian cancer, testicular cancer. It's literally a radiation box, right? So you don't want it near. Even when I just have a phone call and I have to put that phone call to my ears instead of put it on speaker, it, like, feels like my ears bleed because I'm getting that, like, radiation straight into my head. And even putting on Bluetooth headsets for a long amount of time gives me this weird feeling in my body because your body doesn't actually interact well with the electromagnetic frequencies of these technologies.
Well, especially you're not grounded, like, there's a way of being able to use those technologies and be unaffected as if you was 8+ hours a day walking around barefoot on the earth.
But even still, grounding, it would affect you because those technologies are all vibration. So it might, like...
It's not, because the energy is grounding out of you. It's not affecting you. That's the whole point of grounding.
Yeah, but okay, maybe if you're using it while you're walking
because
around
you're
on the earth.
Releasing it, it's not... Going in
but
a
all frequency is affecting you all the time. So it would be like saying just because your feet are on the ground, that 5G tower in front of you is not going to affect you. It's going to still have its ripples through the fabric of space-time. And there's a reason we feel relaxed in very calm, beautiful, serene, natural spaces. Because the frequency that it's generating is conducive to our body. It's organic and it holds a beautiful resonant frequency that makes us feel calm, at peace. Technology does not do that. It increases heart rate, it increases cortisol, which is tied to the survival instinct. It also releases shit tons of dopamine when we're interacting on social media, which gives emotional crashes and kind of depletes our dopamine levels. So we can, that's why we're feeling like zombied out or drained when we've been doom scrolling.
Well, the younger generations, they can't even watch a full-length feature film anymore because they're so used to short-form content. And like, I've seen so many like Gen Z and Gen Alpha memes, like them themselves, like making memes of themselves of like, how do people older than us, like, how have they watched films? Like, they just can't even sit for a film without falling asleep.
Even my brother, who is into film, has trouble watching TV series or movies at home instead of TikTok.
Yeah.
And he's really into film, and he'll go to the...
He's a filmmaker.
He's a filmmaker. He makes movies. He'll still go to the cinema, but, like, we'll recommend these great series or things that I know he'll like, and he just like, oh, I can't really get into long-form content right now because it's rewiring the brain to have these snap little form contents that's constantly stimulating. But, like, oh, my God, everyone I know, when they get lost to that time, you fall into the scrolling and you just lose yourself. And every time you come out of that, there's nothing good about that.
There was something that I wanted to touch on back to the headphones, the Bluetooth headphones. Like, the point that I want to make here is that I never really wanted to use the Bluetooth headphones because I'd heard about, you know, they're pretty damaging for the brain and everything. Yeah. But it gets to a point where it's like the having the headphone wires is like, I'm doing it while I'm gardening and doing my horses or cleaning the house. So you keep yanking them out and it hurts your ear and you almost break your headphone socket. And then, you know, so then you just end up giving in to the wireless, and then you're like, oh yeah, this is so much easier. You can't even go back to the wire. Right. But then it's like, with the phone, like, I just delete my social media apps that I'm feeling like productive with because it's so easy to lose hours on there and come out of it like, what the F was I doing? You know, you just scrolling through some random person's stuff and it adds absolutely nothing to your life, and if anything just makes you feel depressed because you got sucked into it, because it's how the human brain works. Like, these apps are designed to do that. But what I'm getting at is, it's scary how we, like me, someone who is really against a lot of this stuff, even I get pulled into it.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, I'm against AI, but then last night we were working on doing, like, art-generated images. Yeah, so that I was actually interested in making. And then suddenly I'm just like, oh my God, this is, like, really amazing. This is really fun. And completely losing touch in a sense of, oh, is this actually a good thing for humans?
Yeah, because it's fun. You literally, like, especially with the AI, like, that we're using, which is the ChatGPT 4.0 on your phone, you can speak with it. It's like, Siri is like a bloody fly toothpick compared to GPT 4.0, where you can actually have conversations with it without having to type it out, and it can answer you so well. And we're just describing these images, and it gives exactly like better than our imagination. It's like so quick. And at the same time, it's like, yeah, we don't know how to draw very well. We don't know all those things. But if we spent the time, instead of consuming content, instead of falling into the social media trap and stuff like that, if we spent time actually developing the skills to draw, we would probably be able to do those things pretty soon.
It would be a lot more fulfilling because there is that, like, issue with instant gratification.
It's the instant, yeah.
Yeah, so it's like, there is something about instant gratification and then what is it, like, long-term...
Yeah.
Because gratification. Yeah. So it's like, there is actually a difference between, like, what it releases in the brain and, like, the level of satisfaction and the growth of the brain of doing something. So it's like, where does gratitude go when AI takes over?
Yeah, because imagine...
You know, gratitude for just knowing something, gratitude for having learned something, yeah. And the feeling of, like, of that, and yeah. having that understanding in your own brain without getting it from... a device.
Yeah, because imagine a child. Like, a child will scream for what they want, right? Let's say it's candy, which is not good for you. And you, every time they scream for candy, you give them the candy, in giving them the instant gratification. They will start to develop bad habits. They'll start to know, oh, I can scream to get what I want. And when I do that, they gain a sense of entitlement
yeah.
that I should be able to get that. So let's say they're adults now and they haven't resolved that, you know, then someone won't give them their candy or whatever they've used to replace that. And then they'll feel entitled, like, I need this right now. And then they'll start yelling. And then that's when you see the Karens in the Starbucks going apeshit onto yeah. the bar. But
what? We're going to have way more Karens at the rate we're going. And it's done. This same concept of instant gratification is screwed up. So it's the reason behind most mental health issues and relationship issues and
yeah.
all kind of issues. Because think of, like, you know, relationship issues. So in countries where we would have, like, really high birth rates in the past, and now record low birth rates, and then what else is new over the last
record high divorce 20
years
rates.
What is new? People using way too much porn. Like, it's too easily accessible. It's really feeds your laziness. You don't have to do anything in order to gain something that's meant to be this beautiful human experience that you can have with another person. And people also, you know, completely moving away from intimacy and, like, actually learning. It takes, like, time of being in a relationship, and when you're using that stuff, it completely takes away from relationships. And then you wonder why the divorce rate is really high, why we're not having as many children anymore.
And, like, it's that grass is always greener, but in a different way, where it's like, oh, I can just swipe onto them, you know. Yeah. That's the mentality that's starting,
but
to
it
be...
creates a chemical difference in your body. Like, studies have shown that men who use a lot of porn have really high estrogen level. You know, estrogen in men is not, you know, off putting to the woman. So if you're in a heterosexual relationship, and the same with testosterone, in, you know, is raised when they use it. So it really, like, fucks up your chemical balance. And I believe all of this stuff does, like, your brain balance. Why do you think depression and anxiety are at an all high? You know, they're so high right yeah. now. There's so much.
And so much confusion is, like, normal. On identity and all that stuff.
But that's got to be to do with what is influencing our brains, technology.
Yeah. And this is where we come. So Elon Musk, Neuralink, and probably a lot more new companies that will start to be surfacing up. Neuralink is just the first. iPhone was, like, one of the first kind of smartphones that was out there, and now it's kind of become the mainstream. So Neuralink might be the first person to dip their toes into the water, but 10 years down the line, 5 years, a couple years, you might have an even better company, and they're going to sell you superpowers. And just as we've seen here with Elon Musk, he's selling telepathy, the ability to, it's almost like a magician who can control technology with their mind. This is going to be unprecedented, and that's what they're going to sell you. But we want to shift the topic of conversation right now, and this is where we need to open our minds, because we've been conditioned into a state of existence for a long time now, telling us that we as humans do not have any extraordinary abilities. We kind of push it all away to fantasy and things like that. But I have studied the deep states of meditation and yoga since I was 19 years old. I went to university to study the yoga history and philosophy. I've traveled the world and spoken with many mystics, and just you and me alone in our practices and moving towards deeper states of consciousness and interact with our cosmology, with nature on a deeper, more fundamental level, have had incredible experiences. And one of the things that I want to share before we get into how we've seen super consciousness and how we've been able to access these deeper states of mind that Neuralink is trying to sell you, I did want to kind of get into some of the other cultures. And one of those especially that I was really, really fascinated by was I was studying with a teacher who does pilgrimages all over the world, and she went and studied with this Aboriginal tribe and in Australia. And she brought to me the concept of the dream time and the dream talk. And so within indigenous cultures of Australia, many are known for their rich and intricate belief systems deeply rooted in the land, the earth, the planet, space, and timeless spirituality. One of the most captivating aspects of Aboriginal Australian culture is their concept of the dream time and the lesser known but equally fascinating dream talk. These concepts offer a unique perspective on the possibility of telepathic communication, not through Neuralink, but through ancient wisdom. So the dream time known as Tiukurpa among the Anangu people of Central Australia and by various names across different indigenous groups is the foundation of Aboriginal cosmology. It is a complex spiritual framework that encompasses creation stories, laws of the universe, and the interconnectedness of all living beings within the land. And this is something that physics is only just starting to come into. We know that dark matter makes up 99% of space. And this dark matter network is like one giant fascia system, like this network that runs through the very fabric of time-space. As humans, we are electromagnetic, energetic beings. There's actually no separation on a quantum or microscopic level between my arm and the rest of the environment. These boundaries are only defined by the senses and bandwidth spectrum that we're tuned into right now. Once you begin to alter the frequency of your perception, your boundaries of who you are will begin to bleed into the rest of the world and the cosmos at large. So the dream time represents a timeless dimension where ancestral beings shaped the world, and it continues to influence Aboriginal life and culture. So while the dream time serves as the spiritual underpinning of Aboriginal belief systems, the concept of the dream talk takes the idea of telepathic communication to a whole new level. Dream talk is a lesser known aspect of Aboriginal culture, and many people would never have heard of it. It suggests that communications can transcend spoken word. According to many indigenous traditions, dream talk allows individuals to connect on a profound level, sharing thoughts, emotions, and knowledge without the need for verbal communication. And this is a tradition that's passed down amongst mainly the chiefs and shamans, the seers of the different tribes, and they're able to communicate with one another across vast distances to arrange meeting points within the vast landscape of Australia. Because how else would you do that in ancient times? Because you don't, you know, a phone to instantly send a message. But in this dream time space, we can bridge that distance. And
it's just like in our last episode that we did, if this solar event happens and people's consciousness gets like instantly advanced. Also, could it be happening because things like Neuralink are coming out and that we're going to lose our organic humanness? So this is a chance for humans to become advanced really quickly so that they're not outshined by the Neuralinks.
Yeah. And the thing is, like, just like how I was talking with art, like, you could get AI to generate your image instantly, or you could learn to paint. Sometimes you'll get, like, an instant download. You may have a spontaneous out-of-body experience.
Or a child prodigy.
Yeah, a spontaneous spiritual experience where you're suddenly granted knowledge, but most of the time it takes a bit of work. And if we took just half the time to dedicate ourselves to some ancient practices, some practices to enhance our consciousness, instead of spending it doom scrolling or on social media or consuming content, we would already be way more advanced than we are as a society now.
But how long has like medical science, it pretty much ignored the fascia?
Yeah.
And like what made me think of that is I have horses and I was listening to like a horse medic interview recently who is specializing in fascia in horses and finding out that like literally fascia has just been completely ignored. If you think like race horses and everything, there's a lot of money going into keeping these very expensive horses doing their job, right? And the medical technology for horses has just been looking at bones and muscles.
Well, your fascia system interlaces everything, and that's a perfect metaphor for dark matter, because dark matter is not just out in, you know, the everything we see within our physical world is actually only a couple percentage physical matter. The rest is empty space, and then within that empty space is that dark matter. And if you imagine that the fascia is this like spidery network,
it holds
everything together, it frames and holds everything together.
But even in human health, it's not enough. Like the fascia, it holds all of the emotional energy.
Yeah, and traumas.
A lot of it. Well, our whole body holds.
Even if you hurt yourself, the fascia will congregate to where you've hurt yourself and start to clump together to protect
and harden
and crystallize. And then that's when you start to experience stiffness and pain, inflammation.
Yeah.
And it, to just give you a better visual, it interlaces within organs, within bones. It's not like an external system. It's all interlinked. And through the medical industry and kind of the phenomenon of the modern human mind is that we love to label, segment, and separate things.
Yeah.
But the human body is one. It's all working collectively, and the fascia system is like the blueprint wiring network that kind of interlaces through everything. As the nervous system, which the yogis called the nadis, and how they all interact.
What I was getting at with that was just the point of, we're only just finding this stuff out now about our own bodies, and we're only just starting to look into and wonder about dark matter. It's like this stuff is very new and just being explored, but very much the makeup of our reality, in every sense. And so it is exciting times, because I think once we actually start tapping into the power of that, then we're definitely gonna be raising our consciousness.
Yeah, and I have had experiences with some other dimensional beings in deep states of meditation, and the way that these beings communicate is not through words. Within, you know, spiritual communities or people who have begun to dive into kind of extra human capabilities, they normally communicate in frequencies that carry emotional imprints as well as images and a knowing sense that allows you to interpret all of that. So when they're all combined together, you can deduce meaning from those things. So you'll get a stream of emotion incorporated with images as well as a instinctual knowing about what those things are about. And that is the advanced form of communication that is being talked about when we're speaking about the Aboriginals and these ancient practices and dream talk. Verbal communication is actually quite low and primitive, because verbal communication relies on the idea of labeling things. And we've labeled, let's say, a tree, a tree. And once it becomes a tree in our head, it is solidified into that. science kind of accepting new ideas, archaeology accepting new ideas of the past, because once humans label something and cement it as truth within their mind, and this is a phenomenon that occurs because of our language and because of the way we separate ourselves from the world. And so it's not until you remove your kind of label around what that is that you can actually begin to truly see something for the first time. And the yogis have this practice where they focus their attention on an object, and it could be the flicker of a candle flame, it could be a tree, an effigy, or a stone statue. And when you first look at it, you'll come up against your mind, and you'll come up with the way your language has framed everything around it. You'll start to recall memories or times you've seen trees and things. It'll all be coming into your memory as you're trying to focus on this. But they say if you focus long enough, soon the labels will begin to withdraw until you are just purely observing it with no cognitive imprint or preconceived notions about what that object is. Because the preconceived notions are the things that we've structured with language and labels around it. But we're only pointing. Language only points to things. It doesn't actually reveal the essence of what that object is. It's kind of like descriptions that we use in AI for AI to generate something.
Yeah, and it's a very like common practice in any kind of spirituality. If it's one of the main practices in A Course in Miracles, which is a really good spiritual study, like, and course that you do that basically does that same thing of the objects and really getting into consciousness. And witchcraft and paganism all do a lot of candle gazing and stuff with that same kind of intent. Yeah. So and it is a really... like proven it, but not as easy as it sounds.
Yeah, and I've done this practice more times than I can count, and I can tell you what happens once your mind withdraws from the external faculties that it's labeled on the external world. You see the object for what it truly is, and that is its essence, its energy. And what happens is quite profound. The object actually begins to dissolve its boundaries, and you see it in this light. It's very hard to describe. You kind of see it as a coagulation of energy. Even if it's a water bottle has a living essence inside it. The water bottle ceases to become a water bottle, and it just is what it is. And what happens is that becomes a reflection. And actually you see that when you're pure awareness, that you're not separate from that water bottle, and the water bottle is not separate from you, because the mind inhabits all of space, but we contain it within the mask or limits of our egos and our identities to our bodies and our attachment to our bodies. Yeah, let's get back to kind of the Aboriginal side of things, and to understand the connection between the dream time and dream talk, it's kind of like what we've been talking about right now. It's that the Aboriginal Australians believe that everything is interconnected, and that the dream time serves as a bridge between the physical and non-material realms. And we want to avoid using the term spirit, because I think spirit is just something magic. You know, there's a quote, magic is just technology we don't understand. And I think spiritual is used to describe less immaterial or less dense kind of realms of existence.
Like not proven by science.
Yeah, things that are kind of beyond our typical sense bandwidth, basically through the eyes, ears, and our gates of perception into reality. And so basically in this context, dream talk becomes a natural extension of the dream time, enabling individuals to access and share the wisdom of their ancestors and the land itself. And something that's very common with Aboriginals is song lines. And Native Aboriginals can walk the land and tune themselves to these song lines that their ancestors installed. and it's a pathway within the fabric of space-time where they've sung a song, installed it within the literal firmament of space-time. You know, a descendant walks onto that line, they will hear the song and they can follow that song. And that song will often lead to sources of water, sources of food, spiritual places. And this is something that, you know, most people will dismiss as crazy talk, but it is a phenomenon that exists. And telepathic communication, as understood through dream talk, is not about thoughts and words, but it's a profound form of empathic resonance. Think of something, I'll say it out loud, and you...
It's like, even just for my job, obviously I'm a tarot reader, and, you know, people are just like, oh my god, I can't believe it. How are you so spot on? How are you so correct? But it's like... I do it exactly that way through energy. I don't have like a voice. Like sometimes I might hear stuff.
Right.
But like my main way of reading is I feel it and then I interpret the feeling.
Yeah.
Into like, you know, it's just there's no logical way of doing it, but it works and
well,
I make
just
money
like
doing it.
Interpreting an emotion.
Yeah.
We know what sadness feels like, right? We know what happiness feels like. That's a feeling. And those are very base feelings. It's like saying the color yellow and the color green, or the kind of, you know, it's green and blue and red are the primary colors, right? So we have our primary emotions and our primary feelings, but then subtle things, you know, one color is a mix of midnight amethyst, cyan, fuchsia, you know, like all these different colors mixed together, bit hints of gray, of white, you know, color mixing. And that's kind of how an emotional feeling will be able to be interpreted by us. And that's what happens when you deepen your nervous system and understand the intricacies of how the human body can truly feel. And she's talking about a sense of feeling, but of course we have multiple senses, and that's why people can see visions.
Sometimes I get audio.
So imagine a mix of everything. Yeah. Imagine a mix of everything. Scent, vision, sound, and feel. All those things mixed together, you can transmit those things. Especially in the yogic tradition, they have a whole thing, and I've spoken with people who have received this phenomenon. It's called a Shaktipat. And it's where a very awakened being can transmit knowledge or understanding just by touch. And they're doing that by passing their electrical current, their energy, through the human body into another person, into another person's body, and they're transmitting this knowledge. That's why.
Yeah, but there's so many studies with quantum physics. Like,
yeah.
You can look it up. Like, there's so many studies done. So, you know, someone's heating a penny up on the fire. And I think the first one was with a little boy, and then they say to the little boy, you know, they put the penny on him blindfolded that's not been on the fire, and they said, oh, I'm going to put it on the fire now, it's going to penny on you. But they blindfold him and they put the cold penny on him again, and he screams in pain as if it's the burning hot one, and it even blisters like he got burnt with a penny. And they've done this multiple times.
Yeah, it's, but there's also the
brain can, it's like what you believe as well can literally create your reality.
Yeah, and there's studies that show, like, they'll be giving people like lots of stimulant images, and then one will be like a really scary image that will spike the nervous system. And the studies show that the nervous system spikes a couple seconds before the image is actually shown.
Yeah.
So something in the body already knows what's about to happen. And so these are all just examples. Aboriginal elders can often describe dream talk as a silent conversation of the soul, transcending the limitations of language. And one thing that I've noticed is that our reality is very loud. It's very loud and on the surface.
Distracting.
It's distracting and loud, but when you get into a deep state of meditation, this silent conversation, this voice, or this feeling, it's almost like they get buried beneath all the jumble of TikTok, all the social media,
your own thoughts.
All the words in your head. Yeah. all the things you have to do. You have to be tuned in to a deep state of awareness to be able to pick up on these messages.
But that's why we've been conditioned out of like our natural abilities, and with things like keeping us busy. You're too busy to do everything you have to do, let alone add like meditation things. And you know, you hate what you do. So this is like most people, right? So they're spending 50 plus hours a week doing something they don't really want to do just so they can make money, just so they can live and pay the rent and barely scratch by. So then how do you feel after being drained to that level? Oh, I'm just going to put on Netflix. I'm just going to watch TikTok. Something to switch off, because I can't bear to think about how much I hate my life.
Yeah.
Like, what is the
how run down I am.
But you might even enjoy more dangerous than nihilism, to be like, what's the point? There's no point in anything. Yeah. Like, that's the most dangerous state anybody can be in, and this is the state our society is keeping people locked in.
Because, you know,
it starts with school.
They're not teaching us to enhance our empathic abilities.
Or our creativity.
They're not teaching us to deepen our awareness, to question
the relationship, healthy relationship.
It's not something that's taught in schools. Yogis or, you know, Buddhism and even those things, those cultures have been completely corrupted by the influx of social media and the modernization of the Western world. I mean, the spread of the Western mindset. But let's travel back a couple of thousand years to ancient India before all of this has come about, where the yogis delved into the depths of human consciousness, and they developed practices and found secrets to the human body. They figured out how to tap into its potential and unlock the secrets of the mind and beyond. Among their profound discoveries is a state known as samadhi. And this is a super conscious experience that transcends ordinary awareness and offers a profound connection with consciousness in general. And I'm trying to avoid using spirit or divine, because I think that's a whitewashed version of what it is. This is actually a form of yogic science. These yogis tested and repeated and wrote down their findings for thousands of years. This is a science of the human body and how to develop deeper connections and expand the mind beyond it. And basically, samadhi is one of the kind of groundbreaking things within yogis, and it is the final limb of achievement. It is a deep state of meditation and unification with the cosmos. It represents the culmination of yogic practices at attaining self-realization and spiritual enlightenment. Now, self-realization, you might be like, oh, I know who I am. I like this. I'm a craftsman. I chop wood. I'm giving my examples. I like to do bow and arrows, archery.
If anybody needs Neuralink, it's us too.
I'm a writer. I love nature. So those are all things we might identify with our sense of self, external things. But what's happening here is that samadhi is the attaining of the true realization of what we are. And that is pure awareness that is unlimited by the body. Awareness that can soar across space and time. Awareness that can dive into deeper secrets of the universe, unrestrained by our mental faculties and the conditionings of our world. And there are a couple stages of this, and even this is like the base level. Like, that, this was found thousands and thousands of years ago, and since this state of consciousness was discovered and other people started achieving this state of consciousness, they realized, actually, wait, we can take this way further. And now there's a whole branch of states of consciousness that one can achieve through different varying paths of yoga. And there are basically two stages within samadhi. One is called savikalpa samadhi, and it is in this initial stage that the practitioner experiences a state of deep absorption, often accompanied by a sense of unity with a particular aspect of the cosmos. And they may still maintain some awareness of individuality and the external world. So they might still have this sense of I am, that is, you know, kind of basic understandings that they're unique or still individualized. And you can experience insane, like, otherworldly visions, heightened intuition, and profound insight within this state of mind. And the final stage is called Nirvikalpa Samadhi, and it is the highest state and is characterized by a complete absorption and sense of oneness with universal consciousness. So when we're talking about universal consciousness, we're talking about awareness, everything, you know, understanding of matter, how things connect, understanding the universe without external instruments. And this is what's going to be sold through Neuralink. You become Google, you know?
I read this book once that was like a fantasy dystopian. I think it was called like Finding Eden, and then the next one was called Escaping Eden, something like that. And it was like the story was is that the main character was a human, an organic human, but lived in a world where everyone had like advancements made to them.
Yeah.
And there was only like basically all the humans were extinguished, so the humans who did exist were hiding out because they would be kidnapped by the enhanced beings and people because they were actually getting really sick and they needed organic humans to fix something in themselves, but were doing like inhumane tests on humans.
And what have
what was funny is when she would meet like her allies who were like the tech people who were against advancement, right. You know, they would make jokes in a way of like, oh my god, like you're ugly or, you know, simple or right. not intelligent, right. You know.
Yeah.
And it was just it was a really interesting book, but like, wow, like not who you want to live in.
No.
Because these were like advanced.
Well, if you want to read about real superpowers, you can watch actually our video on ancient yogic superpowers,
yeah.
As well as read, I highly recommend reading an autobiography of a yogi. This is when a time in India kind of before modern age took over, and there were still quite a lot of realized yogis in the time, and they had a range of all sorts of superpowers, from being insanely strong, being able to wrestle tigers, to
it's a really famous
to be bit. Able to produce scent out of thin air, which is seems like a strange superpower, but why not? You can produce lavender from the tips of your fingers.
But like, isn't it in that book where there was a part where he said, it might not have been that book, but I'm pretty sure it was, where like one yogi said to the other, like, hey, look at me. Like, all day he'd been trying to levitate the yogi, and he's like, hey, look at me. And he levitated over the water. And then the other yogi saw him, went to him, oh, hey, look at me, and just walked over the bridge.
Mm.
He was like, I did the same thing, but I didn't spend all day sitting here trying to do it.
Yeah, well, the ultimate thing of yoga
there is the spiritual ego. That's the point of the spiritual ego. Don't go into doing this so that you can levitate, so that you can produce scent and be like, look at me.
Yeah, and the power is
so hard to people who go into doing that and dedicating their lives to it. That is majority of the time ego run. They want to be special. They want to be this. So, but you get to that point. And then you need to realize, you might not even get to that point, you know.
Yeah. Well, in the Yoga Sutras, where Patanjali talks about samadhi, he says that yogic powers are a byproduct of this practice. And to focus your attention on trying to achieve the powers is a distraction from the true goal of yoga, which is ultimate realization of the self, of the beyond the self. So
to be in the observer.
To no longer being an individualized self, pure awareness. Once you're at that state, you might be able to produce powers, but if you're truly egoless, you won't desire unless, you know, it's for some sort of grand cause, maybe. But modern neuroscience has begun to shed a bit of light on the neurological and physiological changes that occur during deep meditation and samadhi. And studies have shown that advanced meditators experience altered brainwave patterns, increased activity in the prefrontal cortex, and reduced activity in the default mode network related to self-referential thoughts. These findings align with yogic descriptions of samadhi as a state of profound consciousness. There is a brainwave frequency called the gamma frequency, which is related with heightened states of meditation that most humans can't even enter. And it's actually only been observed in very trained Buddhist monks and other meditators. So already at a base level, we as human society at large in general are not accessing the true capabilities of our bodies. If we were taught this from a young age, the world would be a completely different place, I'm telling you. Can you imagine, like, if we're all in these bliss and the transcendence, one understanding of unity, we wouldn't be harming animals, we wouldn't be driving our action to mental exhaustion, to, you know, we wouldn't be like having all these mental instabilities either, or mental problems, which are at the root cause of this kind of modern society. So, you know, already that science is beginning to observe that, wow, meditation actually profound states of consciousness. And, you know, it says within samadhi that when you attain that, you no longer view yourself as a self separate from the world. And then now we have scientific studies saying that they reduce the activity in the default mode network. And the default mode network is what is basically, I call kind of the brainwash mode. It's what we are unconsciously operating in. It's like a operating system that was installed in us through school, through propaganda, parents, ancestral trauma and stuff that we're existing with throughout our life. And, you know, in these ancient practices are ways to upgrade our operating system and to make more connections and achieve different states of consciousness. So just saying it again, if we spent half the time that we did on social media and consuming content trying to ourselves, then, you know, the world would be a different place. It's been proven that even just when people come together and meditate in large groups, the resonant field of the earth changes. We have the ability to literally alter the resonance and the vibrations of an entire planet. But we're shoving, you know, silicone in our breasts, we're pumping ourselves with harmful toxins, we're inputting chips into our brain because we've been told that we don't have the ability to change this.
But like, one thing I just want to point out is we're going back to, you know, sitting in a lotus position, meditating all day. A state of meditation can be done while you're doing your work, while you're washing the dishes, while you're even communicating with your friends and your partner. You can be in a state of meditation which is not attached to ego or your own identity and be in that energy all the time. Like I always say, like, my biggest inspiration, which is the uncle from Avatar.
Uncle Iroh.
Uncle Iroh. He is always in this beautiful state of meditation whilst completely playing a part in living his life here on Earth, because we are here basically in this video game. We came here to play. We didn't come here just to go back to where we came from. But it's about bringing that state of being into your play. So I really think it's about us mastering that side of meditation and in where we're at right now. But
like I was saying last night, it's like you do need to practice swimming before you jump into the ocean. You can't just jump into the ocean. I mean, in Russia, they throw their babies into the ocean and they just know how to swim instinctively. But at a certain level, you've been programmed out of that. You know, like once you grow up, maybe that instinct is not there or available for you because you've been programmed otherwise.
But it's always awareness, like if you're washing the dishes or whether you're sitting in a lotus position or listening to a guided meditation, it won't change the intrusive thoughts.
But it's hard to
the awareness of the intrusive thought and constantly going through that. You can, you know, maybe you can't.
But it's like hard to do like a deep breath work practice to increase the pranic energy within your body so that you're nervous system has a larger capacity for more electrical current to pass through. Because you might, you know, you need, sometimes you just need to plug in and charge. You plug in your phone every night. You get religious about plugging and charging your device. You get religious about, you know, maybe brushing your teeth or taking a shower. Where is that attention to your consciousness? You know, one thing that I
I'm not saying that's not important. Think I love sitting down, lying down meditating more than anyone. But the point is that some people, you see these, like, you know, we watch that Cody Ko morning routine. And the guys in it, like, I sit down with my app and I do my 10 minutes of meditating a day. And then completely forget about the meditative state for the rest of the day. No, it's meant to
carry it on into the rest of your day.
Yeah, but they don't mention that. They see it as, this is my block time. Yeah, and I've ticked off meditation, when meditation should be a constant, like something you're constantly working at throughout your day.
And it's like about plugging back in and reconnecting to your sense of self if you've gotten lost in your thoughts again. And one thing I really admire about the Muslim religion is their prayers 5 times a day. I think that's a very beautiful practice. And, you know, Muslims are not behind in the world. Look at the world right now at large. They're thriving, right? Yeah. And still they have time 5 times a day to practice their prayer. And while not I might not
Muslims,
agree with
just like not all Christians go to church on Sunday, not all Muslims pray 5 times a day.
No.
That they have the exact same issue that Christians have.
Yeah.
You know, the last time they went to church was when they were christened.
Yeah, right. But it's kind of like, I don't agree with exactly with all the philosophies. I don't really even agree with organized religion, because I think in itself, it's run by man and so has the faculty of failure because man's mind is running it. But that's not to discredit some of the beautiful practices that are enriching their lives within that culture. And within the yogic belief system, the regular practice of meditation and the attainment of samadhi can lead to profound transformation of the individual. It is said to bring about inner peace, heightened intuition, and a deep sense of interconnectedness with all living beings. In the superconscious state of samadhi, the practitioner transcends the limitations of the ego and the egoic mind and gains access to higher levels of wisdom. And I love breath work, because the breath is, you know, kind of like the broom of the vacuum of the mind. It can kind of clear away all the thoughts, all the things that are kind of jumbled in our head, and put us into that state quite easily. And when you're in that state, you just know, you're just pure awareness without a single thought. And you can direct that awareness, because that's pure energy, and you can direct that awareness. And this is when we start to come into kind of something that we call the liminal state. And when I was kind of just getting out of my depression, and I've always been into fantasy, I stumbled across the notion of astral projection. And I thought it was fascinating, the idea to be able to leave your body, travel across space with some sort of astral, non-physical. And just, you know, most people believe, oh, that's not possible. But when you see the CIA has run their own version of that, they do remote viewing, which is basically psychic spying. But I trained myself to do that in a month or so. With daily practice, I was able to leave my body. And the things I saw broke all the conventions within my mind. They completely opened up the possibility of what this universe is and helped me tune back into nature when I had lost touch with it. It helped me tap into secrets of the cosmos, of deeper understanding of how we fit into this great, you know, cosmic dance. And to be able to see outside of the box, to see dimensions and angles that cannot be conceived within the human mind, to see colors that I've never seen before, to be able to fly across the galaxy and the universe, and to be able to relate these experiences with other practitioners. I had a friend who did astral projection too, and we would often meet up, and then when we'd wake up out of the projection, we'd kind of go over things and we'd experience the same things. And that's something that completely changed my perspective of reality. And one of the greatest things it did was removed my fear of death, because I understood that there's something more than the body. And I used to be so scared of death. My friend and I would freak each other out thinking, dude, we're just going to be nothing, man. You know, we're going to be nothing. And that's what we're kind of taught. But I saw like beyond that, and just having that fear of death removed, just that alone can offer such liberation in your everyday life. So, yeah. And kind of one thing that opened the gateway into these things, sometimes you might not be able, because you're conditioned, to grasp the concepts that we're talking about. Many of you will, and that's amazing. And we'd love to hear your feedback and things like, do you think that, you know, I really want to start pushing this organic evolution, you know, organic evolution. We don't need these machines to become greater. We already have those capabilities. Graham Hancock, who said that all politicians should at least have had 12 sessions of ayahuasca before they can be considered for election. And it's because the natives and the ancient people also developed technologies through plant medicine. And plant medicine can offer a window into these states of consciousness that we're talking about. They figured out, especially with ayahuasca, they figured out, okay, if I combine the root of this plant and the bark of this plant and then stew them together, I can break down an enzyme in my gut that blocks the production of the release of DMT. And DMT happens when we're in deep states of meditation. It's in our pineal gland within our brain. We release DMT during deep states of meditation, dreaming, or when we're about to die. And they figured out, oh, we can actually open the window past the veil and see what's there.
I think like that is more about just how much we've lost touch of our intuition, because like, what about the grandmas in Italy who have been passing on their tomato sauce recipe for generations? Mm. And way before they had the science or the information to know, knew to take the skins and the seeds out of their sauce because this would cause like irritable bowel syndrome and issues in the gut. Mm. The chemicals or whatever it is that the plant like has to protect itself, yeah. It's in the skin, it's in the seeds. And that's just like, I would say, an intuition, like this natural knowing and
or
understanding,
a dream cognition with the plants, or you know, in a way that
I think it's more intuition, because I don't think you have to be in some special state. Like, I think
that, but for intuition, also have to be in a relaxed, you know,
yeah, well, like a relaxed state of consciousness. Yeah, like, but it's like, I don't want to put it out there as like, this is some special state that you need to get to, or you need drugs or loads of practice. It's like, it's such a simple thing.
Yeah.
And it's just what we naturally are. And it's like going back to that. And I think it's really important to have language around it that feels not, you know, because sometimes I feel like it's this, you have to go to India, and it's not like that. One thing that I've been listening a lot to, I cannot say his name, Eckhart Tolle. Yeah, he's amazing. And one thing he said recently, which resonated with me, was like, you know, people often like think they're having some big awakening and they're like, okay, I have to go to India or to some special retreat, yoga retreat, and I have to do this and I'm going to be relaxed and, you know, I'm going to feel so good. And it's like, well, actually, spiritual growth always happens through, any kind of growth happens through some form of challenge or suffering or struggle, right? You want to grow your body mass, you know, you have to work out, you have to work through your limit, you have to push past
meditation.
Your limit, right?
Same and meditation.
Exactly, but we have to have the struggles in a way to get us to that point. Oh my God, I'm so done with my brain that I'm just gonna fucking do this meditation. I'm gonna like do the brain training needed, or, you know, you can't, it's not to be necessarily done in luxury. But also it's not like this unreachable thing of like one day you'll save up the money to be able to go and do the ayahuasca trip, or one day, like, all I'm sort of saying is you can incorporate it if you have struggles or, you know, challenges in certain things. It's like just sort of bringing it back to, there was a point where there was hardly any women in England because everybody was thinking they're witches. You know, these were had very good, you know, very good intuition.
Yeah.
And it was just seen as evil.
Yeah, so you can see, like, kind of why we've reached this state. And I'm not saying that the true teachings of Christianity and of Jesus are, I think they're beautiful, the true teachings. I'm saying that man-made power religion, the whole, all of Christianity's spread started with hundreds of sects of different Christian tradition, Christian beliefs, warring against each other, murdering one another, fighting for power, and also burning knowledge and destroying the beliefs of other cultures. You know, we see it in South America, in America, the pagans within, with even in our Western world, all of it was destroyed and obliterated for this one narrative. And it was for control. The church is for control. There might be some people within it that want to teach the true teachings, but as a conglomeration, it is power and it has a lot of money, and you can see what it's doing. And the counter was atheism. When we were given force-fed such a strong, like, religious and spiritual thing, then the counter thing was atheism. Like, no, none of it. Yes. Science, practicality, matter, you know, like all of that stuff. And then we became hyper-focused.
Science is constantly being updated and proven wrong. And the whole point of being a scientist is to be open-minded and always willing to be proven wrong.
Some people have lost touch with that. But I was one, like, I was on YouTube at like 2 a.m. once, and I was watching this science guy talk about plasma and stuff like that. And he was talking about, like, the true motive of science is about discovering the depths and inner workings of the universe. And that's exactly what the the goal of kind of yoga is. And I think, you know,
well, it's about the inner world, the inner self, the inner journey, which is everything. Because when you go within, just as Trey was saying earlier with the tree example or the candle, you realize that you are that. You are everything. There is no separation. So by going within and understanding that and losing your identity, then you can actually understand everything. Right, it's sort of what you're getting at. And I agree, like, with going back to our last point, because it's getting quite long, the podcast now, I think that plant medicines can be amazing teachers. And I think especially if it's from your own culture and where you grew up, extra beneficial and meant for you, you know, to discover. So I do think that there is obviously an issue, as with anything, like absolutely anything can become a crutch, right? There's a lot of people who, you know, they get addicted to going and doing ayahuasca or whatever it is, weed, mushrooms.
Yeah.
But as Trey said, I do agree that they can very easily become a crutch, you know? So it's,
and used in the wrong setting, you're disrespecting it, because plants live. They have a consciousness. Everything in this world has a consciousness, even stone and wood, things that we might, you know, even cut wood, anything, a table. Everything has a form of consciousness. Of course, these plants have a deeper sense of consciousness. Just think about what biting into a single, psychedelic mushroom can do to your mind. That is the consciousness it's representing. And every time I've taken it, it's encouraged me like a mother. Now, find your own way to get there, to get here.
But you know, not with everyone. Like, a lot of people get very addicted.
Yeah.
And you don't have like a naturally addictive personality.
I do.
I don't know.
I'm addicted to nicotine.
Yeah, but
I watch content. I used to be addicted to gaming. I've gone through a drug problem.
You have more willpower than a lot of people do, because you can you've dived into things, but you've dipped very quickly out of most of them. And like, even with your nicotine habit, it's he uses a pouch. He doesn't smoke. You know, he very quickly knew he didn't want to do that. So it's like, I feel like you have a really great willpower. I find it very inspiring. But a lot of people,
I think it started with my...
get hooked and also tell themselves, oh, I'm just having an amazing experience, I'm learning more. Like, they can fool themselves that they are becoming more conscious. They're using that as a crutch to get there, you know, and almost like your life isn't actually changing very much. And that's another key to see if something is really benefiting you or not.
Yeah, really be careful with Neuralink and the things that are still going to start coming out. It's going to be merging with machine powers like you've never imagined, you know, bodies. You're going to look amazing. I know that I've changed. Think about it, just how much we change from like teenagers to adults, but also how much your consciousness will actually change your physical appearance. If you are feeling ragged, run out, and everything like that, and you will start to look ragged and run out and decrepit. If you continue to fuel your body with energy, if you continue to fuel like in deep meditative states, your body will change. You will become more beautiful. If you do those things, these practices might clear up, and it did for me. I had horrible acne all across my face, and you can reinvigorate those things and control the chemicals that are released within the body and everything like that. And when you're energy and clearing out the lactic, you know, the stagnant energy within your body and making yourself a clear vessel, you will become beautiful. It's just the truth. You don't need to alter yourself physical.
Another thing, just to put you off Neuralink, like, what if, like in our last episode, we spoke about the solar storm. There's no internet, there's no electricity, it gets cut out, it's on and off. What do? You can't charge your brain. You know, you've got this whole device in your head. If there's complications and you can't even like go to the doctor, you are making yourself more disabled by putting yourself in that position. You're making yourself more reliant on the system, which we've already exposed in the last episode is, you know, being held up by toothpicks. Like, literally, we rely so much on the system. Imagine then having your whole brain, like, and your health connected to your brain and everything relying on the system.
And can you name one piece of technology that doesn't bug out? Name one. It doesn't exist. Every single piece of technology we have has bugs, has problems. It's so bad. It's like, there's always things to fix. Imagine having that in your brain.
No turning it off. Well, I guess
you can turn it off.
You can turn it off, but who knows when they've got a way to turn it on for you and you don't have a choice but to have
it. What if it bugs out and it starts like emitting this horrible bleeding like frequency into your brain and you can't turn it? Sorry, bug. Sorry, error.
Yeah.
You know, you can't do it. Like,
crazy. Well, we've got to go and, you know, feed in more into the system and do our weekly grocery shop now. And we need to go. So.
Yeah. But yeah, thanks so much for tuning in. And really consider, this is a pivotal role in humanity right now. What side of the fence do you want to be on?
And share this video with your friends, so that if you're scared of Neuralink and you don't want to live in a world where you feel the pressure to get Neuralink because everyone around you is like a superhuman, then send them this video so that they can actually really think about whether that's a good idea or not, and hopefully they decide not.
Yeah.
Thanks for watching, guys.
Oh, and if you would like to support us, you can buy us a book down in the comments. And if you would like some more unfiltered content, potentially some live podcasts, then join us over on Rumble, and I'll have the affiliate link down below. So yeah, thank you guys so much for tuning in, and we will see you next time.
Bye.
Hopefully in the ether sphere, within the dream time.